All right, we'll say good morning, good morning. Guten Morgen, everyone. Schos Baruch Hashem. Let's be able to begin the week learning together. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's shir. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Nisan, Seidan, Semehekin, for dedicating all the Shem Drushos this month to show their Akaras Atov to Hashem for all of his Nisim and Niflos. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu continue to bestow his Rachmanos upon us, redeem all of the hostages, bring complete Hatzlacha to Am Yisrael and to Eretz Yisrael. And the Ilui Nishmas Yachmiel Buck's father, Martin Buck, Mutl Ben Chaim Leib HaKoin. To thank our Dafyomi sponsors for today, Robert Emes, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of his father, Yaakov Ben Ruvain. And to thank Dovi and Nina Elman for dedicating the Shir in the Sklusa Refua Shalema for Sprinza Elka Bas Basha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Cholim will have a Refua, all of the Neshamas will have an Aliyah, all of Klal Yisrael should have a Nechama, and Halavai, our hostages should come home Bekarov, our soldiers to be successful B'chol Maaseh Yadehem, and we should be Zoche Amirat Hashem to the greatest bracha of all, the bracha of Shalom. So we'll say with that, let us, again, it's going to be kind of hard to top yesterday. That felt like a transformative, cathartic experience of Torah. Mamish, it felt almost like a Maimon Har Sinai. Like, if you ever wonder what Har Sinai felt like, right? And that Aliyah and that connection. I felt like we had a little bit of that yesterday. So we'll say, so today, but it's going to be great. Don't get me wrong. Today's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. I'll say, but life sometimes is, you know how it happens? Like, sometimes you have like an incredible event, an incredible moment, and then you try to recreate it. So sometimes the biggest mistake you can make in life is trying to recreate incredible events. Because sometimes what makes incredible events so incredible is that sometimes they were spontaneous, they weren't scripted, and they just kind of came together. Then when you try to script it again, it doesn't work. So sometimes, again, we just accept that there are incredible moments, and every moment is incredible. Every daf is incredible, just incredible in different ways. Well, so we are picking up. We left off on the bottom of Nun Tesima base 59b, and we left off at Tan Rabbanon, which is 2, 4, 6, 7 lines off in the bottom. So just to close out this sugi, remember again, Abosai, the reason we even had this whole Gemara of Tanu Shalachnoi, Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkadus, Rabbi Akiva de Rabbanon, was because we were in the sugya of Ona'as Dvarim. That's where we were. Right? So remember again, this whole thing was a response to Ona'as Dvarim. So the Gemara says as follows. So Tanu Rabbanon, I think Gemara kind of now closes the circle. Hama'ane as hager over b'shlosh alavin. But say, if a person verbally afflicts a convert, he is in violation of three prohibitions. Valochtso, and if one literally, like physically afflicts the ger, over bishnayim, ultimately, again, he's in violation of two lavin. So the Gemara says, Maishno ma'ana d'chsiv shlosh lavin. So we'll say, so remember again, by inui dvarm, verbal affliction. I will say, what are the three lavin that we have by a ger? So ger lo sona, v'chi yogor itcha ba'artzchem lo sonu oso, v'lo sona ishesa miso, the ger bechlal miso. So we'll say, so the point over here is there are two specific lavin that talk about not verbally afflicting the ger, and then there's one general lav of don't mistreat another person verbally. And obviously a ger is included in that as well. So a total of three lavin when it comes to afflicting the ger. So the Gemara says, lochtzo nami shloshik sivi, but by physically mistreating it, there's also three lavin, lo salachatzenu, the ger lo silchos, velo si lo kinosha, the ger bichlalu, elo echazeh v'echazeh b'shloshi. The Gemara says, you're right, in reality, there are three lavin that speak about verbal affliction of the ger, and three lavin that speak about what we'll call oppression, oppressing the ger, which, again, doesn't have to be, doesn't mean physically necessarily, but it means, for example, like charging him interest, right? The idea is engaging in oppressive behavior. So three lavin that speak about verbal oppression, and three other lavin that speak about generally what we'll call oppressive or negative behavior. Now, why is the ger singled out? So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Elazar, Agadol Omer, Mitnei Mahis Hira Torah. And Rabbi say, because here's what's interesting about this. On one hand, we saw before. Remember again when we began the sugya of Ona'as Devarim? What was one of the examples we saw of Ona'as Devarim? You shouldn't remind the ger of the fact that he's a ger. Right? You don't say, oh, you know, I tell you, you come from Gentiles. Or remember again when you were a Gentile. So it's interesting that on one hand, we don't remind the ger that he's a ger. Right? We're not allowed to do that. Yet, on the other hand, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, you better be additionally sensitive to how you treat the ger. So like, you can single him out by reminding him of his ger kite, right? But at the same time, the Torah singles him out by telling us, the rest of us, the rest of the community, you need to be especially sensitive to him. So the Gemara says, what's the pshat? So the Gemara says, Mitei mahisira Torah belamid vav mekomos. So we'll say, why is this incredible? Why is that the Torah mentions in no less than 36? Some say in reality there's a total of 46 places about not mistreating the ger. Not mistreating the ger. Why is that? The Gemara says, Mipnei shasuro ra. And I will say, now this phrase is very interesting. Mipnei shasuro ra. That means literally again, suro ra can mean that his turning away would be very negative. So the Pasha Pshat with this is that, remember again, let's take a step back. Why does the Torah go ahead and go out of its way in 36 or 46 places to tell us how to treat the ger? It's very simple. Right, in Yiddishkeit, so we tend to be a very insular community, which is part of the power. Insular is not bad, insular is good. The difference just is often an intact Jewish family looks a certain way. And it has multiple generations. When someone joins the fold of Klal Yisrael and they don't have that, it is so easy for them to become marginalized. So therefore, again, what's going to happen? If you mistreat the ger could turn back to what he was before. He's like, what do I need this for? Right? Beforehand, I was part of a family. Beforehand, maybe I was or wasn't part of a community. But beforehand, I was easily accepted. Now I suddenly come into Klal Yisrael. And now what? And now, again, I don't have a place. But see, you should just know, this is a major issue. When it comes to gerim, people often experience the following dynamic. In the process of conversion, they're often, when you're in the process of converting, you're like a hero. You're like a hero, right? You're like this is a person who is forsaking everything that they could have in the world and joining Klal Yisrael. The problem is that after you convert, you're just a regular guy, right? And once you become a regular guy, often that love and that attention and that support that was there over the course of the process kind of disappears. And it's a very difficult experience many times for gerim. And I will say, there is a challenge of sometimes gerim who leave, not because the community they thought they would have, they didn't have, because the attention and the love that was there is no longer after us. I want to point out, it's not just by gerim. I will say, in general, as beautiful and as wonderful as Klal Yisrael is, sometimes we forget the people who don't exactly fit the typical mold. So whether it's singles, right? Whether it's special needs, whether it's anyone who doesn't look exactly like the typical Jewish unit, a husband, a wife, children, couples who struggle with fertility, all these different things. So in other words, you're in good shape if you fit the typical mold of the Jewish congregational family, husband, wife, children, parents, right? Then you're great. You're great. If you don't have that, it is so easily, not chasron through any malice, but it is so easy, just unfortunately, to be marginalized. I tell you, there was a woman who came over to me who said, I hadn't seen her in shul for a while, a widow. And I asked her, what was that? What happened? Why did she? I haven't seen her in shul. And she said, to be honest, it's just too painful. She said, what happens after Kiddush, after davening, what happens? So again, everybody goes to Kiddush and the husbands find their wives. And you know, that's, and she's like, I don't have that. She said, for the men, it's much easier. Because for the men, you know, whatever, they congregate together, they make Kiddush, they're happy. But for me, I just felt very, very much alone. Again, no one wronged her. No one did anything wrong. But again, it is so easy for people to be marginalized. And Chevra, this is one of the most important things that we have to try to be attentive to. And one of the most important things, we just have to keep our mind that who are the people who, chas v'shalom, there's a possibility of marginalization. I don't know if that's a word, but right, of being peripheralized. And we have to be especially attentive to those people, whether it's for Shabbos invitations, whether it's just a shalom aleichem in shul, whether it's going out of my way to find those people at the Kiddush, whatever it might be. So the Gemara says, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu go out of his way in 36 to 46 places to talk about sensitivity to the ger? It's very simple. It's very simple. Because at the end of the day, the ger has the highest possibility of ultimately of marginalization. And if he's marginalized, what's going to happen? She's marginalized, what's going to happen? They may go back to what they were. Shesuro Ra. They may go back. By the way, Shesuro Ra could also mean to be sar, like sar liros means to turn away, to turn away. So the pashut pshat is they could turn away and go back to their former Gentile life if they feel disenfranchised from their Yiddishkeit. What it also means is if a ger feels disenfranchised and feels marginalized to the point where they even consider going back to the life that they had, shesuro, they feel like they're going to go back, ra, that is a terrible reflection on who we are as a people. We can never allow any person to feel marginalized or any person, chas v'shalom, to feel less than. So the Gemara goes back to the Gemara, says, "May tichsev v'ger lo son, ever lo slachatzenu, ki ger ma yisei meretzayim." This is wild. Look at this Pesach connection. So the Torah says over here, what is the meaning of the pasuk that says, you should not afflict the ger? Literally, don't verbally abuse him. And don't engage in any type of oppressive behaviors. Why? Ki gerim hayisem bi'eretz Mitzrayim. Poof! Incredible. Incredible. Because you were gerim. You were strangers in Egypt. In other words, we know what it's like to not feel part of the group. We know what it feels like to be alienated. We know what it feels like to be separated. So the Gemara says, because you know what it feels like, don't visit that upon anyone else. Rabbi Nassim says, Mum shebecha al tomer lechavercha. So Rabbi Nassim says, you know, a mum, a blemish that you have, don't go ahead and point it out in someone else. We'll say, what does that mean? That, in other words, okay, so now I feel like I'm part of the chever, right? Now I feel like you remember what it's like. You remember what it's like to feel alienated. You remember what it's like to feel disenfranchised. So if you remember that, make sure that Chas V'Shalom be sensitive about that to others. And you were also once a ger. So therefore, be careful. Don't go ahead and point out anything negative about the ger. It's incredible. D'armi inshi, people say, D'zakif le'zikifa bidyukse lo nemalei l'chavre zakif benasei. So this is an interesting expression. People say, like everyone's, like the famous adage goes, if someone has someone in their family who was hanged, you should not say to them, oh, make sure to hang up the fish. In other words, there's nothing wrong with hanging up the fish, that's it. But in other words, if somebody has someone in their family who's hanged, you have to be sensitive even about the terminology that you use around that person. And even something as innocuous as hang up the fish, ultimately, again, may trigger something negative inside of them. I will say, bottom line, just be a sensitive, loving, and embracing people, a person. And especially whenever you walk into shul, we'll say, because again, this is the kind of situation, whenever you walk into shul, keep an eye out for those who you think could be most easily marginalized. And when you are considering who you're going to have around your Yom Tov table, your Shabbos table, think about those who could be most easily marginalized and maybe get forgotten. And when you're making your phone calls over the course of just to say Shalom Aleichem, think about those who may be more easily forgotten and marginalized. That's it. It's not rocket science. Sensitivity is the simplest thing in the world. You have to be aware. You just have to take a few moments to think about it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself models this for us. Can you imagine 36 to 46 places in the Torah where there is a reference to the ger? Why? Be sensitive to people who may not exactly fit in the mold. Incredible. Mishnah. Ein ma'arvin peros beperos. So ultimately, we'll say back to Ono a little bit. So if you're a merchant, you can't mix different crops of fruit together. So we'll say, now listen to this. In other words, now let's say I'm selling fruit. So if I'm a balabais now, and I'm selling fruit. Now we'll say, when a balabais sells fruit, the assumption is the fruit is coming from his field. As such, you can't sell from different fields mixed together because that's misrepresentation of the produce. Afilu, Rashi says over here, Palabai Shomer Peros Sada Plonini Mocher Lecha, Kach Vekach Sin, Lo Ya'arvenu Beperos Sada Achera. So we'll say, we're also going to see there's a distinction between a balabais and a tagar, and a merchant. A merchant is always understood that he's not growing his own stuff. What is a merchant doing? He's collecting from a whole bunch of different sources. So when you buy from a merchant, you know you're not getting from a field, you're getting produce possibly from many different fields. When you buy from a balabais or a balabas, the assumption is homegrown, right? In other words, I'm selling my produce. So if I'm a balabais and I'm selling stuff, you can't mix produce from different fields. Afilu chadashim bechadashim. So we'll say, even if it's new produce with new produce type of Samech 68, v'in tzarech lomer chadashim yishanim. And we'll say, goes without saying that you can't mix new produce with old produce. Now we'll say, now here's what's interesting, by the way. When you think of old produce, see, think of inferior, right? Because you think, let's say, fruits and vegetables. Interestingly enough, when it comes to wheat, often aged wheat is actually more valuable than new wheat. Take a quick look at Rashi, Taf Rashi on 60a. So the Gemara says, Pasak linkar lo yishanim lo ye'arev bohem chadashim. Shayishanim yiveshim va'osin kamach yosim in chadashim. So let's listen to this. Old wheat is less moisture. The less moisture ultimately, again, allows it to produce better flour. So right, so quite fascinating. So certainly, so this works well by wheat. You can't go ahead and mix different peros. And when it comes to wheat, you can mix new wheat with old wheat. The Emes Amru, in reality, Chazal said, when it comes to wine, here's what's interesting. You could go ahead and mix stronger wine with weaker wine. Why? Because the mixture is benefited. The weaker wine is actually benefited by the stronger wine. And apparently, in the right ratio, the stronger wine is not negatively impacted by the weaker wine. I would say that is, by the way, a tremendous yisod in life in general. A lot of times we think to ourselves, if I take of my time, if I take of my resources to help someone else, maybe I'm holding in a stronger place in life. But if I help someone else, then potentially what that's going to do is that's going to erode my spiritual self. Right? Both from a material perspective and even from Ruchnus. You know, we'll say, sometimes you ever have a situation where you've had company at your house, or maybe you've been somewhere, or it's better with company, right? You've had company in your house, and the conversation shifts to something that you're incredibly uncomfortable with, and you're like, I can't believe that this is happening at my table. Mm-hmm. I'm the only person who ever had this experience. Right? And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what this is. And you think, and what's the first thing you think to yourself? You know what? Like, I'm done with this. Like, I have to preserve the kiddusha of my mishpacha, of my home, of my tish, of my table, and I can't have this. So I will say, so you know, the Gemara brings down gadol hachnasas archim yoser mehagbalas pnei hashchina, that it is better to welcome guests in your home more than it is to go ahead and receive the shchina. What's now again? Where do we get that? We get it from Avraham Avinu. Right? Avraham Avinu went ahead and was talking. Vayera Alav Hashem. Avraham Avinu was talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and literally Avraham Avinu interrupts the conversation to go and greet the three Malachim. So the Vashem of HaKadosh says, "What does it mean? Gadol Kabbalas, Gadol Hachnasas Archim Yosem Hakbalas Bnei Hashchina." So he says, you know, a lot of times, this is what he says. A lot of times, Hachnasas Archim, things are said that you're uncomfortable with, and maybe the guests talk about things that, you know what, you wouldn't normally really want to have at your table or in your home. But know that doing for another Jew, even if it comes at a little bit of the expense of your own ruchnius, is the greatest accomplishment you could have in this world. It is better to have hachnasas archim, even if it downgrades your ruchnius a little bit, more than talking to the shechina. Because Rabbi said the greatest thing we could do for each other is to be there for one another, even if my personal holiness and spirituality takes a little bit of a hit. Now, obviously, there's a line you can't cross, right? There's a line you can't cross. At a certain point, you have to preserve your own kiddusha, but you can allow your own personal spirituality to take a little bit of a hit in order to be inclusive of the other. So I'll say, so sometimes what you can do is you can mix stronger wine into weaker wine. And you know what happens when you mix stronger wine into weaker wine? Everything benefits. Everything benefits. If you're the stronger one and you're holding on a place, don't underestimate the impact that you could have on someone else who's having a little bit more of a difficult time. Incredible. The Gemara goes weiter. In ma'arvin shamar yayin b'yayin, afilu nosin lo shmarav. So also you can't go ahead and mix in dregs of wine with wine, but you can give him the dregs, the purchaser. We'll have to see exactly what that means. He's inherently contradictory. Mishnah is arv mayim b'yeno, lo yim karena b'chanos. So we'll say if you have water mixed it with your wine, you cannot go ahead and sell it in a store. Can't sell a store now. Again, we'll say here we're concerned about deceptive buying practices. So if it's diluted wine, we're concerned that someone's not going to realize that they're purchasing diluted wine and they're going to end up making this mistake. Ela imke no deal. Unless, of course, we'll say in general, if you go ahead and you acknowledge to the potential purchaser, this is diluted wine, then that's fine. So the Gemara says, ela imke no deal. Volo le tagar. But I will say, under no circumstances can you give diluted wine or subtle diluted wine to a merchant. So the Gemara says, av bi sho deal. She'eno ela le ramos bo. So we'll say, so apparently, remember, what merchants are people who buy stuff from different sources. It's like a wholesaler, right? And then they go ahead and they sell it to the general public or wholesaler? Yeah, because whatever, merchant. He's buying from a lot. So most of the problem in merchants, sometimes, unfortunately, we're a little bit deceptive in their practices. So under no circumstances can you go ahead and sell diluted wine to a merchant because there's a concern that he's going to try to pass it off as undiluted wine. Incredible. Incredible. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, so we'll say in a place where the custom is to dilute the wine to a certain ratio, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. So the Gemara says, so hatagar no tel mehegranos v'nosin l'soch migura achos. So the mehegitos v'nosin l'soch pitom achos echad v'bilvan shelo yehe miskavin la'arev. Shabbos say a merchant is permitted to buy grain from five different silos, from five different granaries, and gather them all together in his granary. Similarly, again, Shabbos say he could buy olive oil or wine from five different presses and mix it together in his own vat, in his own barrels. The idea being, Shabbos say, this is what we said before. When you buy from a merchant, the understanding is he's getting it from a whole bunch of different sources. And you understand that when you buy from him. And therefore, again, he is permitted to buy from multiple sources and go ahead and combine them together as long as his kavana is not to cheat. Right? As long as his kavana is not, like we said before, like to mix the old with the new with the old with diluted with undiluted. So that halacha l'maisa is permitted. Okay, so we'll say, let's go. Turn Rabbanan. So we'll say, so certainly, if you have a situation where new grain could be bought for four sa'ah, for a sela, An old grain is three sa'ah for a sela that you can't mix it together. Because we'll say, obviously, then what you're doing is you are mixing together very dissimilar items. But even if, for argument's sake, new wheat is being sold, we'll say, so now that's a general case where old wheat, aged wheat, is going to be worth more than new wheat. That's what we said before, because you can make better flour out of old aged wheat. Which is also, we'll say, such a beautiful metaphor, right? That aged wheat produces better flour. And I will say that sometimes there is no substitute for life experience. When you become aged wheat, the flour, right? The good advice that you could dispense, the life wisdom that you have, you know, newer wheat looks so much shinier, I guess, right? Newer wheat looks so much more exciting, right? It has that new wheat look and that new wheat smell. And you think it's better, but the truth is the flour that you get from it, not really worth all that much. Aged wheat, a little bit more life experience, a little bit more life under your wheat belt. And it is incredible the type of fine flour of advice that you could produce. Even for argument's sake, if the new wheat is more expensive, so new wheat is three sa'ah for a sela, and old wheat is four sa'ah for a sela, in ma'arv, you still can't mix it together. Why? Because it will say it's possible that the person is buying the new wheat in order to have it age. And therefore, halacha l'maaseh, it will say, bottom line is, you can't mix new wheat with old wheat. When people want to buy something, they're very specific in the type of wheat purchase they want to make, either new wheat or old wheat. And therefore, again, you cannot mix the two together. Now, listen, obviously, I just want to point out, you could do whatever you want as long as there's disclosure, right? Just to point this out, right? So you can always do some disclosure. And if you do that, then that's on the buyer. That's on the buyer. Lamai said, this is talking about in general without disclosure. So what's the Mishnah said? In reality, we said that you can mix strong wine with weaker wine, because at the end of the day, the mixture actually benefits the weaker wine. Amru Lazar, Ada Amra, Kol Be'emes Sh'amru Halachi. We'll say in general, whenever you see the phrase Be'emes Amru, in reality they said, that statement almost always means Halach L'maisa. Halach L'maisa. So Amru Nachman, Ubein Agitos Shana. We'll say that this is very important. When do we allow you to mix wine together? We'll say, Ben Agitos literally means between the pressings. What that means is during fermentation. So we'll say, the only time you are permitted to mix wines together is when they will ferment together, during the fermentation process. After the fermentation process is complete, essentially, and the wine is wine, you can't mix wine together. It's a disaster. But during the fermentation process, to put them so they ferment together, that could work. That could work. You put some strong wine with weak wine, and that could absolutely work. The Gemara says, "V'ha inna dekama arvi shelo ben agidos." What about now? We'll say, contemporarily, the Gemara says, where often again the storage, the proprietors do mix wines even after fermentation. Amar Papa, the yod did the kamachli. Okay, people know about it and they're mocha. And as we'll say, remember again, if there's disclosure, then the buyer has a right to say thank you, no thank you. So it happens to be that presently they're saying the custom was to mix together wines even after fermentation. That's fine. The people know about it and they're mochel. Rav Acha b'Rav Ravika Amar Hamani Rabbi Acha Hu. The sign Rabbi Acha Matya B'Davar Hanitam. So this is very interesting. Rabbi Acha has a different interpretation of this. Rabbi Acha understands in general, both say that anything that a person could taste, ultimately, again, then that's disclosure. In other words, the fact that I could taste it, so if the merchant wants to go ahead and mix together old wine and new wine, that's fine. Why? Why? Because it's discernible. You could go into the marketplace and you can go ahead and taste the wine. You'll be able to see, do you like it? Do you don't like it? The mixture is good, mixture is not good. So because you have the ability to discern it, therefore, again, the onus is on the buyer, right? The onus is on the buyer. Now, but I have to say, one of my favorite things in Eretz Yisrael on Erev Shabbos is to go to the Shuk. I happen not to like shopping in the Shuk. What I love just about the Shuk is Erev Shabbos, they have like these, a number of like wine stores. And on Erev Shabbos, what you could do is, they have like little samples. I didn't realize it was one per customer, right? But the last one I'll say, there's nothing better on Erev Shabbos when like there are throngs of people. And mamash, you go to the Chanos, right? A little of the Chaim on Erev Shabbos to taste the beautiful wines of Eretz Yisrael. It's the best thing in the world. It's nothing like it. Nothing like that on Erev Shabbos in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. And the Gemara says as follows. So now the Mishnah said, you can't mix dregs with wine, but you can give a person, you could get, when they purchase wine, you could give them the dregs. Now, what does this mean? It's contradictory. First, you said you can't mix in dregs with wine. And then it says, but you could give the purchaser the dregs. So which one is it? What does it mean you give him the dregs? The kamodiale. So I say that ultimately, again, you tell them that there are dregs in the wine. And it says, okay. So also the fact that the end of the Mishnah spoke about, again, informing, ultimately, the buyer indicates that the Reisha is not talking about a case of informing the buyer. So, Rav Yehuda Hagimar, the Zura means to say, "Eima arvin shmarim shal emesh b'shal yom, velo shal yom b'shal emesh, aval no sein lo es shmarav." So, we actually saw this earlier on. This concept, I will say, when you purchase wine, it is understood that part of the volume of the wine that you are purchasing is the dregs. Or are the dregs, right? That's part of the wine. So you're buying, you know, a barrel of wine. It's understood you are not getting a complete barrel of liquid. Some amount of that, and again, there are acceptable proportions. Some amount of that are the dregs that will settle on the bottom. So what is the Mishnah coming to teach me? So let's say for argument's sake, the halacha is that let's say out of a barrel of wine, 10% of the barrel is dregs, for argument's sake. What you can't do is, you can't go ahead and take dregs from another barrel and introduce that into the barrel today. Or you can't take dregs from yesterday's wine and put that into today's wine. In other words, when we speak about the idea that the purchaser accepts that there's some amount of dregs that come with the wine, that's the dregs of that wine. In other words, you can't substitute dregs from a different barrel, from a different type of wine, with the wine that you are currently selling. And that's the Mishnah Tanya that supports this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hashofa Yain Lechavero. So listen to this. So let's say I'm selling wine, right? I'm a merchant or I'm a store shopkeeper. I'm selling wine. And what am I doing? I'm pouring off slowly wine that Reuven is going to purchase. Obviously, if you pour it off slowly, you could avoid what? The dregs. So I'm just pouring him off liquid. Don't mix in the dregs of yesterday's wine with today's wine. So this is actually very interesting halacha. So let's say now I'm selling Reuven a barrel of wine. So what I'm doing is I'm pouring it off slowly, so I'm giving him the liquid. I am allowed to put dregs into that barrel of wine that I am selling Reuven, but it has to be what? The dregs that mamish are that wine's dregs. Literally means I can't take yesterday's and put it in today's or today's and put it into yesterday's. It has to be the dregs associated with the wine that is being sold. And again, purchaser understands that part of his purchase of the wine are the dregs. Incredible. Let's go back there. Mishnes Aramayim Bieno, Harezalo Yimkrenim Bachanos, Ela Imkin Modialo. So we'll say somebody mixes in water with his wine. Don't sell it in a store unless, of course, you tell the customer. So we'll say diluted wine. You have to be careful with diluted wine not to misrepresent it. So there has to be full disclosure. So we'll say, Rava, this is very interesting. Rava, Aisule Chamra Mechanusa. So Rava, they brought Rava some wine from the store. Mazge Tame, he diluted it. Lo Hava Basin, he didn't like it. So we'll say, Shadre Lechanusa, he sent it back to the store. He returned it. So Amalei Abayi, the Hanan Tnavelo the Tagar Afa Pishol Dielo. But I said a second. So in the Mishnah, you can't sell diluted wine. There's a danger of selling diluted wine. The danger of giving it to the merchant, because what's going to happen? Even if you tell the merchant, and you tell him that he has to disclose, we're concerned the merchant is not going to properly disclose. Amalei Rava said Mazga Didi Meide Yadi. So Rava says everyone knows about my dilution. So we'll say this might be a limud schos for the Rashi Light Chevra. We might have found the limud schos for Rashi Light over here. So Rava says, up until now we thought it was a bracha levatala, and now it turns out that maybe there is a limud schos. So Rava says, I dilute my wine with a very high dilution ratio. So because of that, everyone knows it. In other words, whether it's apparent in the color or just like in the smell, but Rava says there's no fear of misrepresentation because at the end of the day, everyone knows my dilution is quite significant. The Gemara says, so I'll say, if you take a look, Rashi says over here, Meziga didi mediyada, sha'ani nosim bo mayim harbe. So Rava says, I dilute my wine a lot. So the Gemara says, "I v'chitema the tafi u'mechayle u'mazbinle." Maybe you have to be concerned that what's going to happen. So the merchant's going to get back to the very diluted wine of Rava. He's going to mix in some more wine to make it a little bit stronger to try to pass it off as undiluted wine. So the Gemara says, "No. Imkein ein ladavar sof." We'll say, "See, here's what's interesting, and this is very important." Halacha was saying, the legal system, right? What we're learning now is buyer protection. That's what this is, right? Our goal is to ensure that ultimately, again, a buyer is not defrauded. That was like, the one thing that you can't guard someone against is someone who is intent on defrauding. In other words, I would say, if somebody is made up their mind that they're going to cheat other people, there is no legal system and no mechanism that could guard against everything. So, if somebody wants to get undiluted wine and pour more diluted wine and make a lot of undiluted wine, okay, Gemara says, if somebody's going to do that, you're right, we can't protect about that. But Lamaisa, Halacha takes into account normative cases. So the normative cases are, you can't sell diluted wine unless, of course, you have full disclosure. Don't sell it to a merchant, because the merchant is going to go out and misrepresent it. But if you have wine that is so diluted that everyone could see it, the Gemara says, there's no chashash for that, because again, it's apparent that it is diluted. So Gemara goes right. Gemara says, Makom shenagu lahatal mayim b'yayin yatilu. Shavos in a place where it is common to go ahead and dilute the wine, they could dilute it. So the Gemara says, Tana. So now it's an interesting discussion. Well, how much dilution is permitted? So the Gemara says, Tana, lemechza l'shlish ul'revia. So we'll say again, it could either be up to a half, up to a third, or up to a quarter. Amarav ubenagitos shanu. So we'll say, so first of all, what you see over here, just societally, these are societally dependent, how much was considered to be a proper dilution ratio? Okay, a half, a third, a quarter, whatever it is, everything is dependent, minagamakom. So we'll say, what is interesting over here is, Rav comes along and says, by the way, dilution was also only done during the fermentation process. In other words, you only dilute wine before it's fermented or during its fermentation process, but you don't dilute wine after fermentation. Now I want to point out something interesting. When they say you don't dilute wine after fermentation, that was commercially sold wine, right? When you bought wine in the store, if they were going to dilute it, dilution would take place during fermentation. But we saw this many times, and this is, again, this is in Yonei Dioma, right? The Gemara in Arvei Pesachim says, Shta'an Chai. If you drank your Arba Kosos without dilution. Remember again, what would people buy? People would buy wine concentrate. That's what they buy. You bring it home, and then at home, you would dilute your wine. So for example, the Gemara Masechet Arba Pesachim says, What happens if a person drank 4 cups of undiluted wine? Shtan chai. The halacha is lo yotzi. You're not yotze arba kosos. So just want to point out, so when they speak about that, dilution has to be done during fermentation. That's commercially sold wine. But often people would bring home their own wine concentrate and you do your dilution up. So let's go. Mishnah. This is a great Mishnah. Rabbi Huda says, it's great. Rabbi Huda says, you can't offer incentives to get people into your store. So Rabbi Huda says, you can't offer the kids klayos, which are like parched, roasted kernels of grain, egozin, nuts, for the children to get them to come to the store. So you can't hand out candy. Can't hand out candy in an effort to get the kids. Now, obviously, if the kids want to go, who are they going to drag along with them? Their parents, right? So now, what you're doing is you're using a hook to get the customers into the store. V'chamim say, of course you can do that. It's not wrong. Yes, you can definitely do that. Next, lo yivcho says Ashar. Tanakam says you can't sell below the market price. Can't sell merchandise at a discount. V'chamim says zacher latov. What are you talking about? Not only is it permitted, but someone who puts things on sale, tzaddik, right? Zachar l'tov, you should be remembered for good. Lo yavar asagrisin, divrei abashol. Well, say you should not go ahead and literally, lo yavar asagrisin means, Rashi says over here, lo yavar asapsolas, he changes it. Lefisha mitok shniras yafosu madvein. So we'll say, so this would be, you remove the impurities from the lentils, or from the beans. The idea is when you remove the impurities, it looks nicer, and you could up the price. The chum say yes, you could do this. Umodim shelo yavro me'apia megura she'eno ela kegoni besa'ayin. But even the chum agree that what? That will say what you shouldn't do is remove the impurities from like the upper layer of the beans. So what that makes it look like, it makes it look like the impurities have been removed from everything, but they haven't, just the upper layer, and that's deceptive. That's deceptive. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, you shouldn't beautify a person, an animal, or utensils. All right, we'll have to see exactly what that means. So we'll say, let's get into the Gemara. So we'll say, let's go with the first case. What was case number one? Case number one is, we'll say, I have a store, and Ruben has a store. I decide, you know what, I'm going to get my competitive edge. I'm handing out candy. Right, every kid who comes, free candy for every kid, or whatever the free. But by the way, I want to point out, is lav dafka targeting children. In other words, that just happens to be, it might be a really good mechanism, right? But lamai says whatever freebies you want to, right? So remember again, so we have Rabbi Huda says you can't do it, Chum say you can't do it. My time is Rabbanu. What's the Rabbanu's logic? The amrale ana mifaglina amaguzi vaat palikshiski. Because again, I will say I could say to Ruven, you say I have unfair advantage. I'm handing out nuts. You could hand out prunes, right? Very apropos, right? So I'll say, right? You can hand out prunes. So I will say, so the Maisa, the idea over here is, I will say, what is this called? This is called capitalism, right? This is called, we don't want big government interfering in free markets. Let things progress. If people want to be successful, I will say, success isn't handed to you. If you want to be successful, that is not based on a government program. If you want to be successful, that is not based on the government setting you up. If you want to be successful, work harder and figure out a hook. But it's not fair. He's handing out nuts. Great. Hand out prunes. Or whatever you have to. Let's say, if you want to be successful, let's say, you know what success is? Success means being willing to work harder than the guy next to you. Being willing to get up earlier than the guy next to you. That's what it means. It doesn't mean restricting him. It doesn't mean limiting him. It means being willing to work harder than anyone else. Chum say, great, you're handing out this freebie. I'll hand out that freebie. Incredible. So incredible. So the man goes weiter. V'lo yivcho says ashar. I will say, can't undersell anything, right? Can't sell us in the market. The Chum says, zachar latov. My time is Rabbanu. What's Rabbanu's logic? I will say, I'm a days. My time is Rabbanu. Mishum de kamar bech latara. What's the logic of the Rabbanu? It's very simple. Because I will say, who benefits? The consumer benefits. So why? I don't understand. The consumer ultimately, again, should be able to be the beneficiary of everything. So if there's a price war, and ultimately, again, prices go down, the consumer benefits, that's fantastic. And if the consumer benefits, then mishpachas benefit. Both sides. Again, free markets. Free markets are good because at the end of the day, again, the consumer always benefits from the competition. Can't go ahead and remove the impurities from the beans or from the lentils because then you'll charge more money. Chum say you can. Who are the chumim? Rabbi Acha, the same Rabbi Acha, matir, but davar hanira. So let's say Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Acha who said before that you can go ahead. There's no deception when it's something you could taste. And there's no deception with something you could go ahead and see. So I will say, so if the proprietor wants to go ahead and, for example, clean up the impurities from the beans and then sell it for more money, that's his prerogative. And it's your prerogative to buy it or not buy it. In other words, that you could say, you know what, I'm not paying extra for sifted beans, or I am paying extra for sifted beans. That's up to you. Incredible. What is this great? Now, what does this mean? You cannot beautify a person or utensils or an animal. What does this mean? Turn around, Banan. In Mishap, so we're going to say this outside for just a moment. What it means is, we're saying, you can't make things look deceptively better than they are. So in other words, I want to sell something. So what do? I go ahead and I make it look much nicer than it is. That's deceptive practice. It's supposed to say, you see, by the way, that halacha straddles this very fine line between, on one hand, free markets, let healthy competition occur, because at the end of the day, again, the consumer will benefit, and protecting the public from deceptive practices. So I will say, so watch this. You can't be misharbitin the behema. Now, what does it mean, sharbitin the behema? So I'll say, so this is apparent, interesting, that you can't brush the hair of the animal so that the hair stands up. Now, I don't know, I guess you really have to like be involved in livestock to appreciate this, but apparently, a sign of vitality for animals is if the hair, I don't know why I'm using, if the hair stands up. If the hair stands up, I guess maybe like it makes the animal look taller or a little bit more robust or a bit more striking.
More hair.
It looks more vital. So you can't, you can't go ahead and like spike up the hair to make it look fuller than it actually is. You can't go ahead. That's very interesting. So let's say you're selling kishkas, right? Literally kishka, right? Intestines. So I will say, so this is actually good to know. Let's say you get into the kishka business and you want to charge a little bit more money. What can you do with kishkas? You can inflate them. You could actually inflate them. It's actually also an incredible Cholamite activity. Right? You could go ahead. By now, you might be looking for stuff to do with your kids, grandkids. Right? So the nice thing is, now you could inflate the intestines. You could inflate the kishkas or the innards, the stomach as well, to make it look more. If it looks bigger, you could charge more money for it. The insurance of Asr B'mayim. Can't soak meat in water. What happens when you soak meat in water? It expands. Right, and furthermore, what's the weather? It expands and it gets heavier, which is, again, you're selling meat by weight. My aim is sharvatin. So I was wondering the aim is sharvatin. So we'll say here they explain it ultimately again as combing the hair of the animal. Actually, Rashi says, mashkin also mesubin, they nofchin maya visara niskaf. So as the others say, it's not combing the rather, what it means is giving the animal bran water. So I'll say water mixed with bran, right? Bran in general is something that makes the stomach inflate, makes the stomach swell. So when you feed the animal bran water, the animal itself, that's the word, expands. What's the word? Bloated. The animal becomes a bit more bloated. When it becomes bloated, it looks heavier. And also apparently its hair stands up. Okay? Ziri Amar Rav Kahana Mizak Fasa. That means again, combing the hair so that the hair stands up on edge. Shmuel Amar Sharla Mirma Tumi L'Sarvela. Shmuel says you can attach linen strings to the sides of a garment. So here's what's interesting. On one hand, you are permitted to make your wares look beautiful. You can do that. Of course, I'll say that's the job of a merchant, right? I always say every merchant. Shuk reference. And I will say there is such an art to the way that wares are displayed. There is, right? You see this often, like when you go like by the spice stores and like that sacks of spices and the colors. The colors are so radiant. Actually, the first time I was walking, last time I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was with my wife in the shuk. We went by one of these, and these salesmen, these are aggressive chevra, mm-hmm. aggressive chevra. So we're walking by, and my wife looks at the site, says, the guy says to her, oh, thank you for stopping by. I've been waiting for you my whole life. I was like, what's going on over here? I said, no, thank you, we're good. And he says, stop being such an Ashkenazi. And I was like, wow. I was like, first of all, you are the worst salesman in the world. But now, like, I feel so angry that I dafka want to buy to show that I'm not an Ashkenazi. I don't even know what it means to be an Ashkenazi. I thought it was, okay, whatever it is. But I'll say, so the Maisa. The point over here is, you of course are allowed to make your wares look beautiful, right? That's part of the marketing. The idea is, you can't engage in deceptive practices. So the example over here, Shmuel would attach nice linen ribbons to the edges of his garment. Rabbi Yehuda, shari lekaskuse karmi. So Rabbi Yehuda, kaskuse karmi, Rashi says over here, kaskuse, Rashi says, b'mei subin, would go ahead and would treat some of the fabrics ultimately with brown water. Rabba, shari lemeida tsuradi. So Rabba would go ahead, Rashi says over here, lahadek begade kanvus b'makabos eitz. Would also, again, I will say, this refers to literally, machlok is actually what Rashi means over here, whether it's talking about hanging out certain garments, beating certain garments to stretch them, Rava Shara Litzelume Giri, Rava would draw arrows on some of the garments. Rapapa Bar Shmuel, Shara Litzelume Dikule. So Rashi says over here, Litzelume Dikule, Litzayer Chitzim Salim. Right, Dikule. He would go ahead and he would paint his baskets. The idea where they're taking their wares and they're making it look a little bit more beautiful. I, what we said before, but you can't go ahead and make the utensils look nicer in order to sell them. Lokasha habacharati habatiki. So I will say, for example, this is about by the baskets, with a new basket, you can make it look more beautiful. With an old basket, you can't make it look like new. So I will say, this is very intuitive. The idea over here is that you could do things to make the item look beautiful, but you can't do things that are deceptive in nature. So you can't go ahead and make an old item look new, or make something thin look more bloated. Okay, that's the idea. So Gemara goes back to, we'll say, great story over here. Pirkas Adamai. We'll say, what does it mean that you can't beautify a person? What does that mean? So Gemara tells a story. Ki hahu avda saba. The Asaba said there was once an old non-Jewish slave. A non-Jewish Eved, and he was trying to sell himself to a master, right? He was, a career Eved, and he was older, now advanced in years, and he wanted to go ahead and sell himself into servitude. The Azot Savi Ledishe Ledikine. So we'll say, what did he do? He recognized that. So servitude is a young man's game. So what did he do? He dyed his hair and he dyed his beard. So now, again, like young, vital, jet black, you know, he's ready to go, ready to serve. Asla Kamidu Rava. So he came before Rava, asking Rava to buy him. Amarle Zimnon. So he said to Rava, can you buy me? Amarle, you aniem b'nei b'secha. So interesting enough, Rava quoted the Mishnah, and the Mishnah said the truth is, it's better to go ahead and employ Jews who may be destitute and needy instead of buying a non-Jewish servant. So Rava said, I'm sorry, but you know, I'm going to give the household jobs that I have to impoverished Jews who need the money. Okay, so then this non-Jewish servant went to Rapapa Bar Shmuel, Zabnei, and ultimately again Rapapa Bar Shmuel bought him. Yomachad Amalei Ashkian Mayo. So what happened? So one day, okay, so now Rapapa Bar Shmuel bought this Eved. He says, yeah, can you bring me some water? We'll say, watch this. Azel Chivrei L'Reisho Dikine. So what did the servant do? The servant washed his hair and washed his beard. Right, so all of the dye came out. So the servant said, I wish I could help, but it's not right. I'm even older than your father. So how can you ask me to go ahead and bring you a cup of water? See what happens over here? So the Eved obviously engaged in a deceptive practice, making himself look young. So Rav Papa Bar Shmuel said to himself, Tzadik nitzar nechlas v'yavo achar tachtav. The tzaddik is able to go ahead and save himself from difficult circumstances and the difficulties literally again beset themselves upon someone else. We'll say the idea that Rav Papa Bar Shmuel was saying like this. Rava acted in accordance with halacha. Right? Rava said, you know what? If you have jobs that need to be filled and there are destitute and needy Jews, give those opportunities to them. So Rava therefore didn't buy the Seved, and because of that he was saved from making a bad investment. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel did not heed this same dictum from Pirkei Avos, right? Bought the Seved and as such suffered a loss. And Rava will say, Hajun Allah Hazov. Let's say mazel tov. Let's spend one more minute on Mishnah. I got to start the new parak. Eitzu neshach veizu tarbis. All right, so we'll say, here we go. What is neshach and what is tarbis? So let's remember again, interest. And as we're going to see in just a moment, this really refers to two different types of interest. Eitzu neshach, hamal v'sela behedinarim, sasayim chitim mishalosh, asu neshu noshay. So we'll say, neshach refers to paradigmatic, typical interest. You lend $5 and you want back $10. You go and you lend 2 se'ah of wheat with the condition that you're going to get 3 se'ah of wheat back. That is neshach. Vezu tarbis. So we'll say, what is tarbis? And we're assuming right now that neshach is biblical interest and tarbis is rabbinic interest. We'll clarify that in the Gemara tomorrow, Mir Hashem. What's tarbis? Just let's finish up the Mishnah. What's tarbis? Hamar bebeperos. Okay, so what's the case? So we'll say, let's say again, I purchased some Ruvain, ultimately again, a core of chitin for 1 dinar. And we'll say, that was an appropriate price. So what happens, I have the wheat, but have not yet paid Ruvain. So I owe Ruvain the money. So what happened? Amdu chitin balam dinar. Then the price ultimately again of chitin goes up. It goes up by 5 dinar. Now, I have not yet paid Ruvain. Amarlo, Tainli Chitai, Shani wrote to the Mochron. So I will say, now what happens? I didn't take possession of the wheat yet. Say to Ruvain, give me my wheat, because I want to sell it, the Likach Bahanyayin. And I want to purchase wine with the proceeds of the sale of the wheat. Amarlo, Hare Chitacha Asulis Alay Bishloshim. So Ruvain says, you know what? I have a better idea. I'll give you wine for the value of 30 dinar. So Hare Lacha Esli Bahen. So we'll say ultimately again, we'll take the value of the wine. At this point, Ruvain doesn't have wine. That is going to be considered to be tarbis. All right, well, so you know what? Well, we're just out of time. We're going to start over here for the mission again tomorrow, Mir Hashem. So we'll get this in. But just understand, Mazel Tov, we just got introduced to Ezu. We finished Hazav. We'll say major accomplishment to finish Parak Hazav. Not an easy Parak. Mazel Tov on starting Ezu Neshech. The adventure continues, we'll say. Shkoyach, a good night.